Welcome to Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. We invite you to stay tuned as Bishop Hill brings to you a relevant word for the real world. Come with me now to a service already in progress.
I'm jumping into right where we left off, or picking up rather, from right where we left off with the thought, the theme, we build. If you weren't here on Tuesday night, I encourage you to pick up that lesson. There's some wonderful truths that we tried to present to you, and I would even encourage you further not to miss this Tuesday night. As a matter of fact, if you only come to church 1 month out of the year, January is that month. Okay, go and get that thing right. Now, some of y'all, you hear that, and you think to yourselves, well, I come all through the year, but like collectively, when we put all the days together that you come to church, it ain't but a month. Just kidding. I say that in all kind of love. It may not feel like it, but I do. I mean that in love. But you don't want to miss this. I believe God wants to establish some things in us. We left off on last week understanding the need for God's burdening of our hearts. That sometimes God allows what he allows in your life in order to depress you. God actually can handle the state, and I believe it's exactly where he wants a lot of us to be, where our hearts are broken. Because, as we found out on last week, and I'll repeat the principle, you will never seek to rebuild what does not depress you. You will not. Show them that. You will never seek to rebuild what does not depress you. This is now an important element to gather, because it is in your discontent that deliberate decisions are made. I'll say that again. When you are discontented, you make deliberate decisions. Nehemiah, the main character of our text, has been overwhelmed with the news that his homeland and its people are not in a good place. As a matter of fact, the news causes him, according to verse 4 in Nehemiah chapter 1, to sit down, mourn, fast, and cry out before God for a number of days. This morning, our attention is going to shift to the prayer that Nehemiah prays from verses 5 to verse 11 of Nehemiah chapter 1, as we intend to investigate a prayer to rebuild. Would you look at your neighbor and tell them, I need to know how to pray. A prayer to rebuild. The first element I want to highlight this morning is that Nehemiah acknowledges God in one way, among other things, as the God who keeps his covenant. I want you to pay attention to verse number 5 again. He says, then I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love. Of all of the things that Nehemiah could have used to describe his God in this moment, he identifies him as the God who keeps his covenant. This is important for us because covenant is the reminder of the way things are supposed to be. Amen. Let me say that again. Covenant for us, particularly in this text, is the reminder of the way things are supposed to be. Nehemiah knows how his home is supposed to be. He remembers how the state of his people is supposed to be. He knows that God is supposed to be doing certain things in response to the things that himself and the other people of Israel are supposed to be doing. When Nehemiah prays to the God who keeps his covenant, he is actually acknowledging that God, as a covenant-keeping God, had given a blueprint for their life. That when God initiated covenant with them, he said to them, this is how your life can and will be if you do your part and I do my part. Now, here's the thing. When he acknowledges God as a covenant-keeping God, he suggests that if anything is not the way covenant would have envisioned for it to be, somebody drifted away.
My Lord.
All right? And we already know that it's not God, Sister Unzi, who drifted away. Covenant now reminds us there's a contract between God and his people. Let me say that again. It's a contract. Tell your neighbor, I've got a contract with God. You do. You have a contract with God that your life is supposed to be a certain way. That if you are a child of God, there is a particular picture that God has of your life. And when your life is not matching up to that picture, you got to ask yourself, who is messing up the covenant? Can I give this to you one more time? Let me try it again. If your life is not the way it was supposed to be from the moment you gave the Lord your heart, gave the preacher your hand, told the Lord at the top of the new year you were going to live for him, you were going to make some changes in your life back in 2013, and so you decided. Was that petty? I'm sorry. I was told if you got to ask if something is petty, it's petty. Okay, first petty point, I get 3 per sermon, okay? You didn't know that, but I had to institute some rules. I get 3 petty moments per sermon. 3 petty points. Tell your neighbor that's one. And if I don't use them all on one Sunday, I get they roll over. So sometimes if I know one Sunday's going to be petty, I'm going to just save them all up. So don't think you've actually gotten by. Okay, just want you to know that. Covenant is the reminder. There's a blueprint. There's a vision for our lives. And when we enacted that covenant, we saw the potential, the promise of God already starting to work for us. And we had this picture of what our life was going to be if both of us kept the covenant. Are you with me? Like when you got up off your knees at the altar, you had a picture of what your life was going to be. Here's a question I want to ask you. Do you even still remember what that picture was? Can you go back to the promise you made with God and the vision of what your life was to be had you not gotten distracted? Do you even remember God's original blueprint for your life, or is your life now at the particular place where you don't even remember what God was supposed to do if you had not violated the contract? Is anybody hearing what I'm telling you? That you ever had so much change happen in your life that you don't remember what your life was like before the changes? I'm not talking to nobody but myself. I mean, really, that God showed you what was possible, but now you've drifted and certain areas of your life are in such disgrace that you don't even remember what it was like before this problem came about. I mean, like you've been married and your marriage has been messed up so long, you don't even remember the last good day y'all had. You don't even remember what it's like to wake up and then go to bed in the same 24-hour span and not have an argument. I ain't talking to nobody. You don't know what it's like the last time. Don't even remember the last time you were excited about going to work. Some of you are thinking, has there ever been a moment I was excited about going to work? Like Reverend, I think you missed that one. I just don't think I ever had that moment in my life. But like that day you got the job. When they told you that you were going, that day when you found your first day of work outfit, put it in the dry cleaners so it could be, y'all ain't talking to me. That last time you actually went to bed on time so you could be well rested, y'all. You still don't remember? Okay. That's how far you have drifted from the contract. You no longer remember. And I believe that God wants to bring us back to that picture. Understand something. The people and the city of Israel, Jerusalem rather, are in disgrace. But they are in disgrace because somewhere along the line, somebody forgot the covenant. Let me remind you again. Don't forget your covenant. Don't forget that you have a contract with God. And if you have a contract with God, he has an expectation that you are going to do your part at the same level he has committed to do his part. When you forget you're in covenant, you start acting differently than you're supposed to act. You start talking differently than you're supposed to talk. It's amazing how many people used to be really in sync with the Lord, and you could tell by their conversations. You could tell by the decisions they were making. You could tell by the people that they gave their time to. You could look at their life and tell they are going somewhere. They're in a contract. They got a covenant with God. But somewhere along the line, because they got distracted, Sister Barbara, they forgot that they were in covenant, and now you can tell by the way they talk. You can tell by who they spend their time with. You can tell by the decisions that they make that they are no longer remembering that they are in covenant. They have forgotten because they went into a different world. And so now they don't even look like themselves. It's the scenario that presented itself in the movie Coming to America. Y'all remember? How many of y'all saw Coming to America? Y'all remember Prince Hakeem? It is you. You remember Prince Akeem? Prince Akeem, Prince Akeem was from a country called Zamunda. And he decided that he wanted to find himself a bride. Now, he is royalty. You understand what I'm saying? He is royalty. Let me help you one more time. He is royalty. But he made a decision blindly. That in order to find himself a wife, he was going to go to America to a place called Queens. Because that just seemed like a royal place. Just seemed like if I'm going to find a suitable bride, she's got to be a queen. Like, let me go where apparently they breed these people. You understand what I'm saying? So Prince Akeem takes his friend. Oh, I'm saying y'all didn't see the movie. He takes Simi with him, and they go to Queens. And when they get there, they find that Queens doesn't seem to have any similitude of royalty anywhere. No shade on anybody from New York, okay? But when they get there, they start making decisions in an effort to acquiesce to the culture. Lord, I don't know who I'm talking. They start. He goes into the barbershop, Prince Akeem does, and he wants to get a haircut that resembles the people of Queens. That'll be $8. Y'all ain't see the movie, did you? You didn't see the movie. So he goes to the mall and he buys clothing. Well, it wasn't the mall, it was a little out, you know, look. He goes and he buys clothing that resembles Queens. Because now he's intentionally making his life fit the pattern of the decision that he has made. As a matter of fact, Maria, he's so intentional, he tells his friend Simi, I don't want to look like a prince. He's so unrecognizable that when his daddy comes, his daddy who made him what he is, his daddy who knows what kind of blood runs in his veins, when his daddy shows up and investigates his context, he's like, what is this? He looks around the apartment. My king, my son should not live like this. What are these clothes? His daddy can't recognize it. Y'all ain't talking to me. Have you made the correlation yet? For those of you that have not, God looks at you in the mess you're in, the culture you have acquiesced to, the way you've changed how you talk, changed who you hang with, changed how you walk, you've changed your appearance, and God steps in when you call him, and he looks at you and he goes, what is this? He tells Simi, we're staying at the Waldorf. Go and get proper, let the bathers bathe you. And of course, you know, old Simi with his perverted self, he's like, put on proper clothing. Did y'all catch that line? He tells him, put on proper clothing because you're royalty. And you're supposed to look a certain way. You're supposed to act a certain, y'all ain't talking to me. You belong, don't forget you're in covenant. And if you're in a contract with the Lord, you ought to look like you're supposed to look. You ought to talk like you're supposed to talk. You ought to dress like you're supposed to dress. Give your neighbor a high five. Tell him you're in covenant. Don't you dare forget that you are in covenant. I'm in covenant. So what I got to remember, Jennifer, is I got to remember what my life is supposed to look like. And I can't be swayed because I've made enough decisions to cause my life, my context to change. And I forget that I am in covenant. That's what actually has happened for Nehemiah. And when Nehemiah acknowledges that God is the God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love, he sees now that that acknowledgement shows him that if the covenant is off, it's because I messed up. If my life does not look like the child of a king's life, it's supposed to look. It must be because I violated the contract. Is anybody hearing what I'm telling you? Now, because Nehemiah sees that he has messed up, his people have messed up, he shows us that what you are supposed to do when you realize that you are in covenant is confess. Somebody shout confess. Confess. Now, here's where you stop liking me. And I'm prepared for it. Huh. Here we go. Nehemiah, we already know, is going to be the one to end up leading the rebuilding effort. But right now, he's got to confess. Can I tell you why Nehemiah has to confess? And I think we skip over this, but Nehemiah has to confess. Here's why. I told you last week that out of the some 2 or 3 million Jews deported from the land, only 50,000 decided to return. 2%, like milk, only 2% decided to go back to the place that God had chosen for his name to be honored. Let me run that back for you. Let me run that back. Nehemiah, at this exact moment, is the cupbearer to the king of Persia. You don't know the geography. I'll continue further. Persia ain't nowhere near Jerusalem. But when they were allowed to go back to their homeland, Nehemiah is among the 98% of them who were too comfortable to leave. Y'all ain't talking to me. Oh, I'm prepared for the hate. Are you ready? Come on, buckle up. Here it is. Nehemiah has to be brought news of the status of his homeland because he's not there. I showed this to you last week. You may have forgotten. Let me go back. Verse 2, Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity. I asked them about them because I wasn't one of them. I got to ask about how things were going in Jerusalem. Why? Because in verse 1, I tell you, I was at the fortress, the safe place of Susa. He has to be brought the news. Let me just suggest to you that Nehemiah has to confess because his sin includes the fact that his heart is not where it was supposed to be. How is that his heart? You ask, I'll tell you. It's his heart, because when all the Hebrews were allowed to return home, he stays with the majority in Persia. He stays in Persia because Persia, he believes, is a better place for him. He stays there because he's got a good job. He's built relationships. He is trusted. He is important. Nehemiah has got it good. And like so many of us, the moment things get good, we forget where our heart is supposed to be. Y'all ain't talking to me right here. Like so many of us, Crystal, when it gets good, we forget the God who made it good. Y'all ain't talking. You ain't talking. That's all right. Deaconess George, here it is. Here it is. Nehemiah realizes now that the disgrace of his people and the torn down walls of his city, he himself is a part of the problem. Y'all ain't. It's a terrible thing when God helps you to see that the reason your life is like it is partly your fault. Some of us, it ain't even partly. It's all of my fault. The reason stuff is falling apart in my life is because I'm not where I'm supposed to be. My heart is not where it's supposed to be. My affection and my attention is not where it's supposed to be. Because see, I let 2 good years of prosperity make me think I could do it, my life that is, without the Lord. I let this little boyfriend I got make me think I could do my life without the Lord. I bought a new car and now I feel like I can do my life without the Lord. And so now when I look at the waste and the ruin, I'm trying to figure it out. Why is my life in shambles? It's because I'm not where I'm supposed to be. Nehemiah's got to confess, Reverend. Yeah. He's got to confess because he was supposed to go back home. Shame on us for the moment we have abandoned the responsibility of being in the place where God chose for his name to be honored. Shame on us when the thing God gave us can demand more attention from us than the God who gave it. It's amazing to me how easy it is to commit to the gift and not the giver. You prayed for a woman, a good woman, a godly woman. I need her to cook, but I need her to be spiritual. I need to have a relationship with the Lord, being around my kids and all. I need her to trust God. You understand what I'm saying? And so God gives you that kind of woman. And as soon as he gives you that kind of woman, you stop spending time with him. Now, that good godly woman that he gave you is more spiritual than you are. That good godly woman now can't stand you because you distract her from serving the God who made her your gift. Nobody talking to me. I might have to change microphones and put my preacher voice on, Leon, because they don't like when you tell them that the reason they are where they are is because they are the ones that left God. And it's a shame because Nehemiah now has to deal with the fact that his home, his place of where his heart is supposed to be, the city of God, is now in disgrace. And he is a part of the problem, that he should have known firsthand the degree of ruin that had accumulated because people with a heart like his were not where they were supposed to be. And here's where you got to be careful, because that Jerusalem is the place of God's grace. And whenever the place of God's grace is not maintained, it becomes a disgrace. I've got ruin in a place where God used to visit me because me didn't do my job. So now we've got a disgrace. Anybody, y'all still here? Yes. Tell your neighbor, don't leave yet. Watch this. Nehemiah now brings us to this final movement. I don't want you to miss this. He brings us to this final movement. It's subtle. Because after Nehemiah confesses, you see that in verses 6 and 7. Look down now. See me praying night and day for your people Israel. I confess that we have sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. How did we sin? We've sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, decrees, and regulations that you gave us through your servant Moses. We messed up. And then, because of his confession, he shifts into something that is it's just wonderful to me. The final movement of this prayer is Nehemiah's commitment. Would you look at somebody like they owe you money and tell them, commitment. Now, I don't want you to miss this. Because it's a simple statement that Nehemiah makes in his prayer that honestly is the strong implication of his commitment. It's in verse 11. Oh Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. Here it is. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. Nehemiah asked God, make the king favorable to me. Why does he need the king to be favorable? He's already in a good position. He's already got a satisfactory life. He's already got access to the king. He goes and he comes in the palace. Nehemiah is a trusted advisor to the king of Persia. Why does he need the king to be favorable? He needs the king to be favorable because his confession has created in him a commitment to go back to the things that belong to God. And now, because of that commitment, he understands it's going to require the king's release if I'm going to go back and do what God told me to do. Because sometimes we have to make a commitment that goes beyond and outside of even our own comfort. Is anybody hearing what I'm telling you? Don't miss this, please. Please don't miss this. Nehemiah asked for God to give him success, to make the king favorable to him, because his confession has produced a commitment And he wants to fulfill that commitment. And so watch the level of commitment that he has. Nehemiah tells you right at the very last words of chapter one. He says, in those days, I was the king's cupbearer. Do you see that? Watch the commitment. Nehemiah said, in those days, meaning that's what I used to be. Meaning that my confession pushed me to a level of commitment that required me to release what I had, even though what I had was quite good. He is a cupbearer. Originally, the function of a cupbearer was to taste, either for quality or for poison, or for both, carry and then serve wine to his master. So you couldn't just walk up to the king and say, hey, king, here's a cup of wine, have something to drink. If the king said he was thirsty, the kitchen would fix the drink. And then they would bring it to Nehemiah. Nehemiah would take the drink and he'd taste it. If it was poisonous, it killed him. And the king was spared. Long live the king. If it was of a bad quality, Nehemiah would send it back because he wouldn't serve something that was inferior to the king. So now the king trusts Nehemiah. The king, Nehemiah rather, has a position as a confidant and an advisor. He's got an office of great responsibility, great power, and great honor. But Nehemiah sees how bad he sinned. And the level of commitment required to compensate for that type of sin. He realizes that if I am going to be what God wants me to be, I got to give up my comfort. You don't hear this. He understands that there's no way I can rebuild if I don't sacrifice.
All right.
Okay, let me help you, because here's the point that you might not be grabbing. Real commitment requires sacrifice. This is the part, Tasha, nobody wants to play with, because we don't like to play with commitment that actually costs. We like commitment that we get by because we satisfy the immediate need of the person's perception that made the request of us. When we say we commit, most people are satisfied and then they never follow up and demand the thing that we promise. But when you really commit to a thing, nobody's got to make you give up something. Y'all, you're not hearing what I'm saying. When you really commit to a thing, nobody's got to tell you that you got to let some stuff go, because real commitment comes with sacrifice. As a matter of fact, if you say you're committed to a thing and it don't cost you nothing, I dare say you're not really committed. Because if all of your commitments have got to be convenient, if all of your commitments have got to be comfortable, boo, you are not committed. Real commitment, Sister Vita, comes with sacrifice. Real commitment makes me change the way I do stuff. If I'm really committed to this marriage, I don't entertain outside individuals. You better stay up here. It might not be good for me to go down there yet. I mean, if I'm really, really committed to the job, if they say be here at 8 o'clock, you know what I mean? That side ain't good either. If I'm really committed to this relationship, this friendship that I say we have, but I know all the people who come around you talking about you and I don't say nothing, I engage, I laugh at the joke. Y'all ain't talking to me. Real commitment comes with sacrifice. If I really want this education, I'm going to do the homework. I'm going to go to class. Y'all ain't helping me. I'm going to class. I'm going to do what I got, even if it means I can't hang out with you. My commitment comes with a sacrifice. If I say I'm committed to my church, you knew it was coming, right? There's no way I was going to put all that out there and then don't give you that example. Then my commitment has got to come with a sacrifice. I mean, doggone, it's 2 days out of the week. Don't you dare again say what you're committed to and you can't identify the level of sacrifice that you pay to be committed to it. Because by sheer declaration of commitment, you open the wallet of your heart your resources, everything about you now is engaged in that commitment. Yeah. That's why they could fall off from the contract, yeah, from the covenant they had with God. Because, see, real covenant means my life is on the line. If it kills me to do what I said I was going to do, then I'll just have to die. Because the last thing I'm going to do is be committed at no cost. I can't be committed and it ain't costing me nothing. That's why you better be careful making commitments and you ain't willing to pay. Like the old folk used to say, you saw how an emotion towards my dad. Like the old folk used to say, your commitment writing checks, your butt gonna have to cash. You better learn. And some of us, our commitment has got insufficient funds all over it. I told them Tuesday night, you got to make sure whatever the cost is, you've actually got enough capital to cover that cost. Because if you do not, then you better stop committing at the level you've been committing. You better bring that cost down because you can't afford that kind of commitment. Some of you ain't ready to be married because, and I talk about marriage because there's a whole lot of single folk in here, because you ain't got that kind of commitment.
Come on now.
Your relationship bank account ain't got that kind of balance. Why would you do that to yourself? Put those unfair expectations out there. What's wrong with you? I almost said, what's something wrong with you? What's wrong with you? To make that kind of commitment. Nehemiah makes a commitment, and the commitment now requires him to sacrifice. Watch this. He sacrifices his comfort and his convenience, and he sacrifices his ego. Do you see this? Nehemiah is not just going to give up his powerful position. He's got to go back to a place that is in shambles. You know how you act when you got something and you go to a place that you believe is beneath you?
All right. You've just received Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. You may order a copy of this message in its entirety for a gift of any amount by calling the church office at 904-699-7962. You may also write to us at P.O. Box 350414, Jacksonville, Florida, 32235. When you call or write, please reference the date the broadcast aired. We invite you to share and worship with us every Sunday at 9 a.m. and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Our church is located at 8050 Lone Star Road. For directions and more information about the church, visit our website at thecitadelchurch.com. Again, that's thecitadelchurch.com. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for Hope with Bishop Terry Hill.